Our next panel is our cash grain panel, and it's my pleasure to invite up to our analyst table Brian Stark of the Andersons. He is in Champaign, Illinois. Aaron Curtis of Mitco out of Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois. And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities, and he is in Lafayette, Indiana. And remember, after this next panel, we'll have a little break. I'll have a little piece of housekeeping before what will set you free, but stay tuned for that.
All right. Thank you so much, Dave. Let's talk about the cash grain market. I asked Brian Stark ahead of time a question. Wanted to make sure he was prepared for this. And so we're going to start with Brian. He's with the Andersons. And Brian, the question I asked was simply, how do you, as an elevator manager, not you personally, but for the elevator, make money?
Well, Todd, contrary to many people's belief, the elevator isn't concerned about flat price or futures where we buy grain. Obviously, there's a caveat in that. As we go back to 08, we remember a lot of grain companies got into margin issues as the market escalated. The difference between today and then was that we had a lot of forward contracting on the books. Today, not as much. And I think that has a point of how much we can do as we go forward. But as far as making a profit, we don't care if you guys sell at 4 or if you sell at 7. Our biggest concern is in the basis. That's where we derive our margin. Where we purchase it from the farmer versus where we sell it to the end user is where we pick up our margin. That's where we're most concerned about making money.
Why does that happen? Why are you not concerned? What happens at the point of the cash sale from the farmer to the elevator that makes you not concerned with the price?
When we purchase grain from a producer and or smaller elevator, we immediately offset that risk with short futures in Chicago. Long, short, anytime you take a position, if you're not net even, you have risk. So when you purchase grain, we're selling versus Chicago and offsetting that risk with short futures. So we're not, that goes back to Todd's question. We're not as concerned about what price, flat price you sell grain at as long as we're covering our risk.
Aaron, can you follow up just a little bit with from Midco? There's a reason that that happens too, right?
Yeah, the state does have certain rules and regulations on how long or short an elevator can be at the end of each day. So there has to be a certain amount of hedged up quantity of grain that you have. But I will, just on the back of what Brian said, you know, we teach a beginning hedge program at Midco, and that's actually tomorrow. So we're going to be teaching some of our newer employees that work with some of our grain elevators, and that's one of the questions we ask is, at what price does the hedging program work? Would we rather have $2 corn, $4 corn, or $6 corn? And really, it's not supposed to matter. Theoretically, it does not matter. Obviously, what Brian said, you know, the last 3 years, obviously, we've had a margin call implication to that that obviously complicates the program a little bit because it's a lot more expensive, obviously, to finance corn at $7, $8 than it is when it's $2 or $3.
Yeah, I'll follow up a little bit. Matt Bennett from Windsor. And my family used to be in the grain elevator business for about 35 years. We went through 08 with a pretty large hedge position, and we were a family-owned elevator, my mom, my father, and myself. That was all that there was. And we were getting 300,000 and 400,000 margin calls every day during the market, whenever the market would go up the limit, and we could, you know, call our banker up, say we need another $1 million here on Thursday. Well, what'd you do with the million that you got on Monday? Well, you know, it's in the same place that this one's
going. Chicago has it.
And so, you know, long story short is this. We wanted to maintain our hedges because that's the way we made money in the past. That's the way we always made money. And fortunately, we were able to do that. Some smaller elevators weren't able to stay with the program. We were able to, and we made the most money we'd ever made in 1 year. And then the reason why I'm working for TGM now is that they came in and bought us at the end of the year, so everybody was pretty happy. So.
All right, so just wanted to kind of clear that idea up that the elevator itself doesn't really care, does, but doesn't really care whether it's $2, $4, $6, or whatever the price of beans are. It's the basis that they're working with at the and part of that is because it's in state law. So they can't carry too large a position, and they have to even up at the end of the day. So when you make a sale to them, they purchased, they actually have to turn around and make a sale, right? You make a sale, they make a sale. So they're even at the end of the day. Given that, let's talk about marketing cash grain. I'll bet you all have ideas of what producers ought to do with new crop. And you can talk about corn, soybeans, or wheat. Other commodities if you want to, and we'll go across the board. Your ideas. We'll start with you, Aaron Curtis.
Well, as far as selling cash, I think you've got to be a little proactive. I'd agree with what some of the bean panel said here today. I think as we continue to rally some of these prices, I think you got to continue to reward the market. Be a little careful from a farmer's standpoint, selling too much cash with some pretty wide basis levels for this fall. But there are some tools out there. Some hedge to arrive tools, some options, obviously, to make do with some of those opportunities out there. But I think you got to continue to be, somewhat aggressive. We continue to move up with some of these rallies and be in that 15% to 20% sold mark if you're not there already.
Matt Bennett?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with what Aaron said. Probably would push that just a little bit more. But most of the farmers in our area, and we actually farm as well. We were able to book our inputs fairly cheap early in the fall last year, and I think most of you guys are in the same boat with me. And I think at $5 corn, you guys are making money, let alone $5.75, $6. So, if you're buying crop insurance and you're going to be able to guarantee, worst case scenario, $850 to $900 an acre, I think you can sleep at night selling $5.75 corn. My personal opinion on this is, we need to be looking mostly at profitability, not just the sheer number. I know guys will say, well, I got some beans sold at $14 or corn sold at $7. And, they might tell you they sold 75% of it there. They're probably lying to you. So just, ignore that and worry about your own farm and what you're doing, yourself. And if you're making money, that's the name of the game.
Brian?
I would agree with what Matt said. I think you have to look at your profitability. If you take a max insurance coverage level this year, I think you can sleep easy at night knowing that most people with their inputs locked in can lock in a nice profit for 2011. The difference is everybody's different. Is it $5? Is it $6? The one question, if I might ask, Todd, of the audience that I heard an interesting statistic the other day, how many of you still have old crop grain unpriced on the farm?
Old crop grain. Hello.
Very interesting. I read a statistic the other day from a peer of mine that I converse with on a regular basis that said that 98% of their customer base was sold on old crop. Interesting. I would say for us, it's probably in the 90-95% range. Based on everyone's hand that jumped up, I'd say the percentage is much lower. But going back to old crop, I think we have to look at where we started back in the fall or prior to last year at the same time, where we started selling corn in the $4 area and beans in the $10 area, and today we're at $7 and $14 or $13.50 for cash, and wonder what we're waiting for. And from our standpoint, I think it's time to look at old crop, getting rid of it, moving on, and focusing on 2011.
Chuck Shelby is on the end here at Risk Management Commodities, and I've ignored you, Chuck, because I don't think you actually are in the elevator business, so I didn't want you to answer that first question. The good news is that Chuck not only works with Risk Management Commodities, but he's also a farmer, and I bet you've got a lot of grain storage on the farm. Is that right? So I want you to talk about a couple of things, why you have grain storage on the farm, and then, of course, if you could talk about pricing cash grain as well. Chuck?
Well, I think cash is king at this point in time. As we go through with these tight supplies we've developed in the last year or two, I think grain bins offer flexibility. It allows us to get through harvest and be able to, harvest when we want to and need to. How much do we have in our bins at home? Not a whole lot at this point. I think, again, moving to a position of flexibility is probably important to have this year, no matter whether it's old crop or new crop. I think part of what's going on, too, is farmers' habits. I think there's grain moving right now. A lot of us want to move grain before we get busy and get to planting. I think there's going to be a window out there as we move into that planting time window, which wherever that may be as we move forward with a wet spring, it may be later than we think. But I think that at that point, Todd, the basis could get pretty good, pretty red hot. So our habits as farmers are we like to move grain, a lot of grain moving right now before we get to planting.
I have to tell a little story. Dan Zwicker, I remember, and I think he said this on the air, the problem with silver or a grain bin is that y'all like to keep it full, and you like to fill it in the fall, and sometimes that's not necessary, and that's a bad marketing idea. So just keep that in the back of your mind. You tell me that your grain bins are pretty much empty, but in the same process, you just told me that basis might pop as we get into the spring planting season. What are you going to do about covering that part of it?
Well, again, it's a natural process for all of us. We don't like to stop when we're planting and focus on that. So as far as what the basis is going to do, not much I can do about it. But, again, I think re-ownership of this crop, I think, again, Wayne brought up a point. You know, we're used to dealing with tight carryouts, tight supply. However, when you start seeing little glitches, whether it be in the delivery process on the cash side of getting it there, or we see little glitches in the weather or the acres, this year, again, that's where flexibility and, in our minds, of risk management is ultimate in importance.
Speaking of risk management, and I didn't preempt any of the elevator operators on this question, but I did get an email last week, and I talked to a lawyer along the way, just about some of the hedge to arrive or the contracts that producers sign with a grain elevator. And, Aaron, maybe you can take this up since you're about to teach some of this to your colleagues there at Midco. Most of the time when you sign a contract, there is an addendum on the back from the the National Grain and Feed Association, right?
I believe that's right.
Yeah, it's from the National Grain and Feed Association, and that allows, when the producer signs it, only allows arbitration and not a lawyer to be involved in the final end of the contract if there is a dispute. Is that right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so the question is, what issues arise with producers because of that, and is there a problem? Or do they just need to be aware that that contract is there and they've signed away their ability with that contract to deal with a lawyer if they have a problem, or if you have a problem with them, or they have a problem with you? Anybody want to delve into that one? Chuck, you want to try that one?
Well, I think the point being with, again, tight supplies, Todd, if we see the market rally, you know, to higher levels as we move in, as we saw in 08, will we have the ability as producers to make the sale to the elevators? We talked about the margins. Matt brought up a great point. Why couldn't you sell it to elevators when we had $8 corn? They couldn't maintain margins. So that point, I think, is very important going into this, is how we're going to be able to sell cash. We'll be able to sell cash if we have Kurt's $25 beans or $10 or $12 corn. I don't think so. So that's where we're going to have to, as producers, be able to use the flexibility of a option.
Yeah, I think from our customer standpoint, the elevator customer standpoint, there's a lot of increased knowledge on making sure we get some of those contracts signed. I think from our standpoint, you know, you deal with a lot of high prices. You deal with a lot of big farmers that are farming outside your area from the elevator standpoint. So I think it's increasingly important that we get some of those contracts signed, at least from our customer standpoint, some peace of mind that knowing that corn and beans are going to be delivered.
Always read the contracts, always read the small print, right? Make sure you do that. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about cash grain. As an elevator operator, I know you're busy in the fall, and that these guys want you to be open 24 hours a day. They want you open on Sundays, weekends, nights, the whole thing. What is it that you would like them to do to either slow the process down or that you need to do to speed the process up?
Boy, that's a tough question. Since I farm as well, I guess I'll answer this from both sides of it. Of course, I'm not in a combine whenever we're accepting grain in the fall, but you know, so I don't get to be involved in harvest a whole lot. But I know that we want to get our harvest done as quickly as we possibly can. Of course, you know, in the last fall was completely different from two falls ago in that whenever corn started drying down, everything was ready. And I know you guys want to go, so what we've tried to do in the past as an elevator is identify what we can physically do safely. And, you know, for instance, if it's going to rain on Friday, we might stay open until 10 o'clock for a couple of days, on, you know, if guys are trying to cut beans. What do we want to do? You know, what do we want to do to slow it down? Well, to be honest with you, I just as soon get it done as quickly as anyone else, as long as we can handle it. So we really don't want to slow the guys down as long as they're being safe.
I'd agree with what Matt said. I think his point about the weather is key. Trying to be as flexible as we can for you guys because we know you want to get out fast. Looking at plant improvements. We just improved our dumping capacity at the Champaign facility here ready for this fall. So trying to aid the ability for you guys to get in and get out. The toughest part of this past fall was the fact that both corn and beans were mature and ready at the same time. And that makes it very, very tough because historically you start with a little corn, you hit beans in the middle, and you finish with corn. So trying to handle both at the same time and maintain proper hours and space was a challenge.
You improved your dump capacity, but I have a secondary question. Lots of these folks run old iron or they have old machinery that they're bringing in. Does that cause a problem somewhere along the line? Can they dump quickly enough if you're...
Absolutely. What I mean by improving dumping capacity, at our dumps now, you can pull up on a semi and open both hoppers at the same time. So efficiency, improvement of speed of unloading, so it doesn't matter the equipment. It just handles better and bigger equipment, more efficient way.
Chuck, what are the elevators in your area? I don't know whether they're here or not. What do they do that you don't like?
Well, I think we have to realize that agriculture has changed with these higher commodity prices and the big demand and the growth in growing more corn for ethanol. The elevators were in a position before they were used to dealing with the volume. So we have to give them a little credit here. Things have changed on their end, too, and it's a significant amount of money they've invested. So, and Matt's point there, too, we had two totally different harvests. So as we've increased the size of our combines and capacity, as the bushels have grown, it's put a burden on the other end of it, too. So I can't give them too much fault for what they have to deal with. It's a changing environment.
How many of your customers, and I'll, if you've got questions, hold your hands up, because I've ignored you for a bit, too. So if you've got questions for these folks, just hold your hands up, and we'll get those answered. But how many of your customers roll across the scale and just make the sale?
More than what you'd think. I mean, it is amazing. And I would just generalize a little bit here, but most of my much older, I'm going to say in the upper third of the people that I deal with as far as age range are more likely to sell across the scale.
You always want to be in the upper third, right? Oh, not in this case. go on, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying.
Sometimes things just pop out of my
mouth.
Most
guys, I guess, in the right out of college age are very, not very likely to sell across the scale. Most of the guys my dad's age might be a little more likely, but then older than my father, who's 64, I would say are much more likely to sell across the scale.
I would agree with what Matt said. I think the small landlord, tends to sell across the scale, but ours is probably a smaller percentage. We work with a lot of our customers on a one-on-one basis to take advantage of the market and forward contracting, but you still see a percentage of people that sell across the scale.
We've got a question back here in the back, if I make my way there. All right. Where did that question come from? It was right here.
excuse me. Assuming that most farmers and you guys won't want to roll into a $1.08 inverse today, making an assumption that there's still maybe 200 million bushel of bad corn from 08 still floating around, just how high could basis on good quality corn get towards, say, the end of July, 1st of August?
I'll start.
So he's got a really nice bin. He'd like to sell it for a really high price.
I think that's an excellent question and an excellent point that I was prepared to talk a little bit about. Right now, as we're trying to secure different basis levels, several of the ethanol plants and processors are paying up more for the July-August time frame. mostly because they're worried about supply situation. I will say that going into spring, don't be surprised if, you know, if we get a little bit pushed behind, there will be a lot of volatility, because not only are we dealing with a bit of a carryout situation, we're going to be fairly tight. You know, if we don't have the early harvest like we were blessed with last year, it could make things very tight as far as processors are concerned. And yes, there is still bad corn out there. Are they going to get the early harvest? I don't know. If they don't and we have a delayed spring planting, I think basis could get even higher. Without it, I still think it can get pretty hot, because I'm not sure how much corn there will be around regionally this, you know, this July-August time frame.
Why don't you all deal with the old crop corn?
Yeah, I think that's a question a lot of our customers would like to know. When's this basis going to start getting heated up? You look at the stocks-to-use ratio on both corn and soybeans, historically very tight, using 1.1 billion bushels of corn a month. We're starting to see, like Matt said, we're starting to see some of those ethanol plants in Indiana, even in eastern Illinois, start to perk up some of their bases for that spring summertime, and hopefully we start to see that continue to move more into Illinois at this point. But I think that's a lot of concern for our elevator customers, as they're looking at that July D spread, saying, hey, I got to be out of corn in July, and how am I going to make that happen moving forward? But if the fundamentals on the USDA are right, and they continue to suggest that we're going to have continued good demand, bases going to have to do some work at some point here, although most of you rose your hand and said you still had corn in your bin, so that might derail something here moving forward. But the spreads are telling us that things are starting to get tight. The basis is telling us another thing, so one of those is going to have to change.
I'll take the contrarian view, I guess, on the opposite side. Not to think that I don't think basis will get hot at some point, but you have to remember, once the producer liquidates his old crop ownership, the function of the market, if there's still strong demand, if we haven't rationed enough yet, is to draw that grain out of the elevator's hands. So keep in mind that there's a lot of stock that the elevators could be holding that could come to the market and potentially suppress any type of basis excitement we see. You have to remember that if we have a carryout, 675 million in corn, at some point somebody has to carry that into new crop. So full expectation is if the market gets to a high enough level, we should see some relaxation of the July SEP spread as we move forward, and maybe your hot market, as a lot of people think, could be in the pre-harvest mode, as Matt and Aaron might have alluded to, is some early harvest premiums as we move forward.
You have, again, the volatility and the uncertainty. All these are going to lead to some really hot bids in certain areas. And, again, I can't imagine this going away as we move into spring. So I think there's going to be times out there that the basis is going to be extreme. And if we have a delayed planting in the eastern Corn Belt, that early part of October, late September, could be some very good basis.
Other questions out here? Brian, I've got a question for you about the ethanol industry, since the Andersons and Marathon have a relationship. And we talk on Wednesday afternoons to the folks at Delphi, the plant there. They have an ethanol plant. They closed this week they're closed, or maybe they were closed last week. Sometimes they run together with me. But there has been a lot of discussion about ethanol plants shutting down, taking just time for regular maintenance. That was what was told to us about the ethanol plant in Delphi. Will ethanol, is it profitable at the moment? And when you look out, does it appear to remain profitable at least through the next 3 or 4 months?
I would say the margins are in the black to near break even for most ethanol facilities that we deal with. I think obviously it's going to be a function of the draw territory you're in. As you move forward, there's some areas around some of our plants that are going to be corn deficit, and what kind of cost does it take to import corn? Obviously, it's an interesting dynamic with the energy market today. As corn breaks because of the concern that consumption slows in the world, as economies slow down, as oil ramps up, it's actually an ethanol guy's dream. You know, there's no reason to slow down. If oil rises, corn drops. That obviously helps the bottom line in margins, along with a lower natural gas input. So to me, I think right now we're not going to see any slowing. I think you're starting to hear of some plants slowing down, but as long as they're at break even to slightly black, I expect them to continue to grind.
Chuck, you mentioned early on, and I want you to start with this, but I want to talk here from the rest of the crew, about 08 when you were forced not to be able to make a sale, that you would call the elevator and they couldn't make a sale. First question is, that probably wasn't on the crop that was in the ground. It was in the next year, right? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. So do you have any expectation that that would be any different this year, so that the 11 crop, the one you're yet to put in the ground, would you'd be able to make a sale? And for how far out, I don't know. So could you go to January? Could you go out into May and make a sale, or July of 12? But certainly not the 2012 crop year. How do you deal with that? How did you deal with it the last time around? And I suppose you have to have a pretty good banker if you want to try to deal with it.
Well, I think the point that we would try to use is use some put options, and not terribly expensive ones. If we have a run, I remember back at that point in time at a producer in South Dakota, we talked about some $6 Dease corn puts. Todd, they were 10 cents at that point in time, and he passed on that, and we still remember that conversation. So I think you can get something that will establish a floor that's pretty effective for not a lot of money. And, again, you can't really, I don't think, for most producers going out and using the futures market, it's the same problem the elevator have, cash flow. But I think we'll be able to use some put options in the December or January time window that are effective, that will not cost an arm and a leg to get the job done and have, you know, that protection below us.
Brian, can you take up the 08 situation, how this year might differ and what you did back then?
Well, I think I commented a little bit on it earlier. I think the difference between 08 and this year is the fact there was a lot more forward contracting before the pre-ethanol move in 07 into 08. Today, producers are more cautious given the environment we've been in the last few years. And I think, obviously, as the lesser book that facilities have on and don't have the margin exposure, the more flexibility they're going to have and the ability to allow you guys to go out and lock in maybe a little bit of 2012. I would caution the producer from getting too aggressive in the deferred years, other than maybe, like Chuck said, a put strategy, without knowing what your inputs are going to be. Because I guarantee this year is going to be a slam dunk as far as locking in a profit relative to knowing what 2012 is going to be, when your inputs start to catch up to what you can sell and lock in for a cash price.
A couple things. First of all, I think that the agricultural sector is much more prepared for this sort of a move than what they were 2 years ago. Whenever we were at the ADMIS annual meeting, Steve Freed said that he had recommended ADM, to get ready for $10 corn and $20 beans, just to have their hedge account ready for that, because, they have so many bushels to margin, obviously. So, I think that we're much more prepared for it, and I'd kind of echo what Brian said. Big mistake a lot of people made the last time around, was went ahead and locked in their inputs and didn't do anything on the cash grain side, which, if you did that, you weren't the only one that did that, and don't feel like we're coming down on you. It was a tough lesson to learn. But the bottom line is, if we're going to lock in one side of the equation, we've got to be really careful on the other side of the equation. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go out and buy a 12 put. You can always buy anything between here and there and make it cheaper. Like Chuck said, the corn market, for the most part, you're not going to see the nearby go down $2 and the deferreds not go down at all. Most likely that's not going to happen. Now, sometimes there's unwindings of spreads, on a short-term basis, but the bottom line is the entire corn situation is very good right now. If you want to go ahead and buy a put option in the DEIS-11, and maybe buy a few extra put options based upon the fact that you feel like corn, could go ahead and go lower and you want to protect some of your 12, you could do so. Part of the reason why I say that is basis is pretty wide. If you can get, a price, I know our elevator, we give a price, but it's 50 under the DEIS 12. I have a pretty good feeling that you're not going to be worrying about 50 under whenever it comes down to the fall of 12. So there's different ways that you can protect that value without just flat out making the cash sale, if you can even make the cash sale.
I'd agree with Matt. I think from the elevator standpoint anyway, a lot more prepared for this year than they were 2 years ago. Obviously, the elevator industry has had a pretty good couple years the last 2 years, which has obviously helped the balance sheet, and obviously that conversation. But the elevator and the banker has come a long way, and they've done a lot of preparation preparing for things like 08 to happen again. But a lot of our customers are seeing mostly just buying grain 12 months out at this point. Don't really want to take on the risk past that. We have a few isolated customers that are buying some fall 12 stuff, but like Matt said, it's some pretty wide basis levels. So I got to continue to keep that conversation going moving forward with your elevator.
Any other questions out here? Yes, sir.
As a whole, as a panel, do you really think that new corn, by compared to the old corn price, is high enough right now?
My thoughts on that is I think my personal thoughts, obviously I'm not there, but the point is that spread just looks pretty wide right now to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think if you look at what the spread's done the last couple of days, we've started to see the inversion kind of relax a little bit. And that's what I was talking about a little bit earlier, that at some point, if you're going to have a carryout at all, and the elevator is not going to get to July and say, boy, I'm going to lose a dollar if I roll any inventory, that spread's going to have to relax even more. As far as your direct question of whether corn is high enough at $6, I think it depends on what you think we've bought for acreage, because we've got a tight stock scenario, and does $6 corn increase acreage enough to help us build that carry out to a comfortable level? Time will tell.
Well, one thing I know for sure is the cotton price is high enough to buy all the acres it can possibly find. Risk management, we do not believe the price of corn is high enough to draw 92, 93 million acres. We don't think the nitrogen market reflects that going on right now. And I think by Todd's own poll earlier, I didn't see a show of hands that they were going to jump corn acres. So in our minds, no, it's not. And I think that the market forgets. If you wanted to plant soybeans right now, all you got to do is go order your seed, and you can go get to Rural King and get your Roundup. If you're going to plant corn, you got to have deep pockets. It's a lot of money to plant corn. So in our mind, it hasn't, but I think the market thinks it has.
You know, and I think it's important to remember, you know, what happened last year. So many people have a bad taste in their mouth for maybe, you know, pushing corn on corn acres where we shouldn't have pushed it. We personally planted corn on corn where we shouldn't have done it. We thought we could get away with it, and we didn't get away with it. A lot of it had to do with the weather. A lot of it had to do with the fact that we just didn't have the right type of fall in 09 to follow up with corn on corn. And I agree exactly with what Chuck's saying. You know, if you're sitting here at this point and you went ahead and ripped up your ground, then, yeah, you can go one of two ways. You can either work at one time and plant beans and sell them for $13, $12.50, $12, whatever it may be. You know, if you sell it at $12 and you get 60 bushel beans, it's $7.20 gross. That's a lot of money. And so I think that it complicates it just a little bit. Yeah, $6 corn provides for a ton of profitability, no questions asked, but the ease factor and the ease of mind factor has to factor in there, and I just don't think that $6 has done it yet.
And the July D's went to $1.80 in the mid-90s, so we haven't seen silly yet. So, I mean, you can't rule out anything happening, obviously, this summer. So, obviously, that's a big one to watch, that July D spread. And like mentioned down there, it has obviously weakened up here a little bit, but as far as are we high enough, I think anything can happen this spring and summer. So I'd be hesitate to say that yet.
Go ahead. When you look at the USDA numbers like from last week, if you don't use 92, if you only use 91, you look what the bottom line becomes. The same thing on the soybeans. If you don't use 78 million, look what the bottom line becomes. So I'm not saying what the USDA will say. I'm just saying that and you can do the math and see where it ends up.
I'm looking at, you just mentioned ethanol is still profitable. I've got friends of mine still feeding hogs, and I've asked him a time or two, how are you still making money with $7 corn? And he says, well, you look at June futures, and we can still make money. And if we're still exporting, who's going to blink first on this? And then as a follow-up, just a short one, I'm finding more corn in the bin than I figured on, and normally I can guess those pretty good. Are you guys, as elevator operators, seeing more corn than maybe have people thought they had on the farm?
Oh, I forgot I put that in there. Can you send the check my way? Thanks.
I'll talk first, I guess. I think the exports, we're already seeing some slowdown. While the last 5 weeks have been the highest watermark of the year on sales, shipments continue to lag the needed pace. I think you're already seeing feed wheat in the world from Australia competing with corn. I think that's a big, huge drawback to the potential export of making our number at the end of the year. So that could be, but if you're just comparing the livestock industry to ethanol, I don't think there's much of a comparison. I think at some point the livestock guy is going to feel it before the ethanol guy does, as long as crude continues to rally.
Any other questions? Yes.
I read in the Agri-News, this meteorologist, he said that for this fall, he looked for $8 and $10 corn and $18 to $20 beans. I mean, do you think he's got anything that could happen? I mean, I know it could happen, but do you think it will happen?
Well, we've heard at least a couple of those numbers once already. So,
well, anything can happen, for sure. I don't know how many times people have come in the elevator and says, you know, how can corn go lower right now? I said easily. More guys can want to sell it than want to buy it on the board. You know, can that happen? I don't know. Owen Taylor's been talking, you know, this drought thing, you know, every year, and sooner or later, I mean, if you beat the same drum, you're going to get it right. You know, that's hard to predict that. He's an excellent meteorologist. But, you know, I've heard Steve Reed say before, his meteorologist hopes to be 30% right 50% of the time. So, you know, I really don't know what the weather's going to do. But as a producer, you know, really, this year, unless you really try hard to screw it up, you're going to make money. And trying to get too fancy could burn you this year. You know, a fall harvest price option on insurance. Do you take it or don't you take it? Well, I know last year a lot of guys were thrilled to death that they took the fall harvest option. You need to really think through these things before you go ahead and make your decisions, because if we end up with a weather problem, God only knows what price is going to do. I have no idea. It's going to go higher. I know that.
From a cash grain standpoint on soybeans, who do you think has the ownership of the 2010 crop, the old crop? Processor, elevators, farmer?
Chuck, we'll start with you. You still have yours?
I think, again, most of the grain has moved. And to answer the question here, I'll just make one comment on what would be the average price of what producers sold their corn and beans in this room, and what would be the average price of the end users, what they bought for it. So they're not making ethanol based on all $7 corn. Neither is a livestock producer based off $7. His average is much lower because most farmers sold at a lot lower price because they didn't end up having the bushels and they thought the market was going lower. So I think there's a lot of components here that we have not stopped, or a lot of people, we have not rationed anybody from this market yet. Another reason, again, the possibility of whether we can go to those high prices we're talking about here because we're so tight, any glitches. Yeah, I think you got to, anything is possible, but you're going to hear out throughout the day, be flexible and do have the ability to do some things here. Don't get pinned into one strategy or locked into making too many cash sales.
He wasn't speaking mostly of the United States. He said he knows of rural hotspots, and that could happen where he thinks it's going to happen.
I'll address Bill's question. I think at this point, what we've seen from our customer base, most people have moved their beans. I don't think the farmers have a lot of beans left on farm. I could be wrong. From an elevator perspective, you know, with South American harvest coming on, potentially being big, we've been encouraged to move. So it's a good question where they're at, because I know the processor is going to start, as long as his crush margins are good, is going to start to look at, to find them. But in certain areas, we may be deficit on beans, and nobody has them.
Who's got beans left?
Okay.
Somebody's got them.
Wow.
So well, not much.
I stand corrected.
But when you start at, the question is not how much do you have, but how much collectively do you have, right? It's not really how much is in your bin, which might not be very much, but it's how much collectively. I had another question back here, and I want to talk to you about RINs before we're finished. Don't let me forget that. Or he might.
Of your clients, what percentage of the crop has been forward priced, and how does that compare to previous years?
That's a great question. As far as our elevator goes, we've actually booked quite a bit of corn. Compared to previous years, I would say we have probably locked in a little more. I'm going to say it's in the 25 to 30% range for our entire system, which, you know, we'll market probably 80 to 90 million bushels this year. You know, I would say company-wide, it's probably no less than 25%. So we feel like we've bought quite a bit compared to normal, and I think it's just due to the, you know, the very high prices.
I would maybe take a little bit different approach from Matt. From our perspective, I would say at most producers for 11 or 25% sold. They've been very patient. We've promoted the Cadillac insurance as a floor to give them some time to see what happens with the acreage battles we head towards March. So I would say at most we're 25% sold.
I'd say 20% is a pretty common number with our customers, so we're right in that ballgame.
Brian, as it has to deal with Marathon and not with the Andersons directly, and the renewable identification numbers or the RINs, those are those are gallons of ethanol that can be put back into the marketplace arbitrarily. They've been used, but they're kind of like an old PIC certificate, sort of. So they're about 700 million. 400 to 700 million bushels of those floating around. They have a two-year lifespan. Will they be put back into the marketplace, and what impact does that have?
Well, you're asking a guy who's not an expert on RINs, but I'll do my best to address the question. I think, obviously, RINs, with any ethanol plant, if the economics dictate, there's many plants that grind over nameplate. And you generate credits from the government because there's a certain mandated level every year, and it changes and grows, that we have to produce so much ethanol in a given year. So if you overproduce that, they can use those RINs, they're traded on an open market, as credit towards what they have to blend and produce the next subsequent year in case the blend economics change. So to go back to Todd's question, I think at some point they could come into the market if we run tight on corn going into 11. I think we've had a pretty good year. We're running at a pace above the mandate where we could be close to 5 billion bushels of demand of corn before it's over with. We may see them in 11, depending on the economics. You may not see them until 12.
Okay. Final word from each of you. Chuck, we'll start with you.
Lots of opportunity out there this year, but the unknowns are of acres, the unknowns of weather are going to keep the market very uncertain, and that's going to apply to the basis, too, as we move forward.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities. Brian?
I'll just echo what I said earlier. I think it's time for the producer to take advantage of the old crop. There's some potential risk with the world economy uncertainty, money flowing into energies, potentially pulling out of the grains. Sell your old crop at these attractive levels and be patient on the new if you want to stay long in the market.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons. Matt Bennett is with Total Grain Marketing.
I would say with old crop corn and beans, I'd probably have them moved if I haven't already done so, and then focus more on the new crop, kind of like what Brian said. I think the focus on the new crop needs to be a multifaceted approach and not just a straight-up cash grain sale. You know, look at what your crop insurance is going to guarantee you. Look into the option strategies and, you know, talk with your local elevator manager or commodity broker and, you know, devise a plan so you don't go into this thing unprepared.
Aaron Curtis is with Midco. Aaron?
I kind of echo all those sentiments. I think I'd continue to move some old crop corn and beans if, from what you have left. I will issue one word of caution, though. If we get into some sort of a summer rally this spring and summer and the markets are up the limit, be prepared when you go in and ask your elevator manager how his day going. Be prepared to realize that his day is not going to be as good as yours. So he can get grouchy in a hurry.
Thank you so very much. Give them a nice round of applause.